Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, no offense, Dr. Jacks. I'm Tom Alley. Just from over. S&P futures down 6, NASDAQ futures down 24, Dow futures down 54 after a up day again yesterday. Although it was a... Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. I woke up this morning. What more do I need for the day?
You woke up, you checked the obituaries, you didn't see your name, and here you are.
And here I am, yep.
And
when I do that day, when that day comes, I wake up and I do check the obituaries. I find myself. I hope it says nice things about me.
Well, that's because we haven't gotten to it yet. Once we get to it, it'll change.
Okay.
You're saying the first draft
will
be nice.
We'll go from the trashing I usually get to.
No, we'll just tell the truth. Just saying.
Oh God, no! Please.
Yes.
Not that.
You can't handle the truth. By the way, whose quote was that about? He sees his name in the obituary and didn't see it. He went to work.
Oh, that goes. That's an old one. That's like an old Ben Franklin or something, isn't it?
No, almost, but not quite that far. As a movie star, famous guy. You loved him, I'm sure.
I don't know. No guessing game. No dead air.
Walter Brennan.
Oh, okay.
You can't.
Well, yeah,
he's
damn
truth.
Near as old as Ben Franklin.
Yeah,
he was.
He was up there. Yeah, he was. Okay, he won back-to-back Oscars, which most
Walter
people.
Brennan is an underrated actor. I mean, he's kind of because of both the way he looks and the way he spoke. You tend to typecast it, but he was a pretty interesting actor and showed up in a lot of interesting places.
One of them was for The Westerner. I forget what the other one was. Two right in a row. Supporting actors. He was Gary Cooper in The Westerner, which was, Judge Roy Bean. Anyway, it was an interesting movie. But remember the booze they slugged a pint of booze? It was Rub of the Brush was the name of the booze. How's that for a name? Rub of the Brush.
Rub of the Brush, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, you are reaching into the annals of your mind there.
Yeah, well, some of those names stick with you. What was the one in the Three Stooges movie? The show was an old homicide was the booze. Anyway, yesterday was an interesting day in the market. We had, I'll give you the exact numbers here before I go spouting away. Dow was up 46, S&P was up 10, NASDAQ was up 118, but all the stuff we've talked about, I mean, really for a long time, If you pulled the six stocks out of there or five stocks out of there, the market was down all over the place. I mean, the Russell's down on the year 6 or 7%. Yesterday, when Amazon had to be up like 80, Tesla was up damn near 100, Microsoft was up like 4, Apple was up 10. Everything else was unchanged or down damn near. But it's really something, the concentration of this.
Doesn't it make sense, just based on the history of the last 4 to 6 months.
In general, but I mean, yesterday,
about it, of course, yeah. Who was positioned to thrive in that environment, or at least to continue operating as planned, and then who was not positioned for that? Who took the beatings?
Well, I get that part, but I'm saying it's some combination of momentum play, where you see a lot of the stuff that. Obviously, I get the feed from Dr. J's group regarding the money that's running into some of these different options. I mean, I don't really get the stock feed. I mean, I probably could, but I never got that one. but I just look at the options part, and it is really stunning, Kevin. If you went out and bought, 2,000 options in, Bumbleep Corp, within a minute, there's now all kinds of people that have this stuff. They're all, like, buying stuff in it. They just assume you know something. The momentum game is dramatic. So, I mean, once you see, like Apple running up $5, $6, $7, I mean, everybody's just a buyer. I mean, if it's Robinhood type of stuff or whatever, I mean, it's not like, I don't think people have made this incredible fundamental determination that Apple's going to make enough money and send a dividend for that much or anything like that. It's just this relentless momentum play. And if it started with, turtle egg stock in Uganda, same thing would happen. It's really, it's the mark, well, you never know when the top of anything. It's really the mark of a bull market that's maybe run its course, because it gets narrower and narrower, and everybody just chases these individual stocks. And I remember, in 2000 when this happened to Cisco and Oracle, and, well, Microsoft was one of them as well. But I mean, those things, I mean, Cisco got to the point where they were 10 or 12 times sales, for God's sake. And, and then all day long you listen to people telling you how the price is actually cheap. And when it goes down, you say, God, how did it ever get there? I mean, at some point.
And you look at it and say, man, that was overvalued.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, the Amazon is taking over for people, but they still don't make any money, really, for them. I mean, what do they make, 10, 12 bucks a year? 20, maybe? I mean, the stock's up.
I think they've managed to go to plus profitability.
Yeah.
I haven't looked in a long time, so I don't remember what the breakout is from the retail operation versus the technology operations, the cloud services and such. For a while, that was the profitable part, was the cloud services. Although they were directing cash flow from retail, reporting not necessarily a profit when there was on a cash basis, and all that was getting plowed into the other side of the business because that's the one with the higher margins. But Amazon has changed so much, forgetting how you feel about them and the way they've operated historically, they have done so much to reshape their whole delivery process. They're not reliant on third-party shippers anymore. They have their own delivery operations, and they've gotten really good at it. It's really that whole regional retail distribution network that they've built is the same thing that's being used as the model now for all kinds of other businesses. I know I sent you some stuff on Target a couple of days ago, and Walmart's doing the same thing. And they're just trying to build out, efficient supply chains for their part, their part of it. They're not on the acquisition side necessarily, but on the fulfillment side, they've just gotten really good and really efficient.
Well, I don't disagree. I'm saying when you look at, when you want somebody somewhere along the line, you want something to be valued in the, depending on the interest rates and so forth, and I know someplace along the line you want to be this 15 times earnings, sometimes 10 if it's, if it's just like a utility, sometimes 20 if it's a growth stock, sometimes 40 if it's a real growth stock. But someplace when a place gets mature, you drop into this, let's say 15 to 20 range, and when you're paying a dividend and you're becoming, pretty much a real company. I mean, obviously lately, real companies are dropping by the wayside due to governmental or germ problems. So this is all kind of off the chart a little bit. But it always stuns me that when there's businesses that have been around that have, have earnings per share or have a margin that have been historical. Now, granted, a lot of times you can do something a little bit better than the next guy. But when you hear stuff like, of Amazon, for instance, eBay's the same way. I mean, back in the day. Where Amazon, they have a huge fixed cost, obviously, with their system and stuff, which is, pretty darn good, for God's sake. And then, but if you go to Matt Weber's barbecue shop in Tennessee, and you order a case of barbecue sauce, and Amazon gets paid, $5 for that sale, their marginal cost is zero, right? It's going to come right from Matt Weber's store. He's going to ship it. It won't be zero, but it's pretty darn nothing, right?
Oh, it is. You're right. It's near zero.
Yeah.
Because it's all done by technology infrastructure, and that's all, you know, they paid cash for it already.
Yeah, so I'm saying that you're
you,
that you're
you may
fixed
be depreciating
cost.
It, but that doesn't mean that that there is any incremental cost to it. So the incremental cost of it is basically power running the servers, so
right.
A little slice of the power that runs the servers.
So I mean, but you go from that sort of a margin and to Amazon's deciding to get in the distribution business instead of UPS. Okay, now UPS, I think, is over the years, is I've always, you know, thought that they were incredibly efficient. It's just in their design of their trucks, they were the first. They were the first place on Earth that just said we're throwing all our tires out and we're going for radial tires because we get 10% more miles per gallon. I mean, they've put so many changes in their trucks and so forth. I'm going to say they're incredibly efficient, and I'll bet their margin is, what, 20%? 10, maybe? So what Amazon says we're going to get in that
gross
business,
margin, that can't be 10. That's way too low.
20? It's almost like a grocery store.
Probably at least, yeah.
Okay, but I'm saying it's not infinite like Amazon's, right? So what I'm saying, you're going to get into that business, or you're going to decide you're going to compete with Federal Express. Well, Federal Express has been doing this for like a real long time, and what do you think their margin is? 30, 25, something? I mean, maybe.
It's big.
I'm talking about variable margin.
It's a big number at this time.
No, I'm talking about variable margin. I'm always doing my cost accounting thing, and I know nobody understands. When you talk about, I'll explain it real quick. If you go sell one extra thing from a place, Amazon, it's not on their Maddie's barbecue shop. The marginal cost is how much for that sale. It costs Amazon a dime. They're going to get $5. Okay, so your marginal return is your margin's what? Damn near infinite, right? But now you, of course, you got your fixed costs on top of that, so you got to get a little piece of every salary and all the other stuff. So you got to keep separating marginal and fixed. But I'm saying that for that particular package, I will bet you that UPS or Federal Express has maybe a 20% margin. They charge you $5; it's costing them $4. Just out of pocket, which is the best way to describe it, for that package. Now, granted, they have their overhead, they got their salaries, they got all their stuff on top of it. But if you take the gas for the plane, the guys that loaded it up, the guys that delivered it, all that stuff, I bet it's close to $4. I could be wrong; it might be $3.50, but it's not zero. It's not like Amazon.
No, it's not zero. I think $4, or at least, you know, however that calculates out on a percentage basis, is that you're probably a little low.
Okay, but I'm probably low
margin on it.
But I'm saying, but when they say Apple wants it, Apple's margin is like 60 or 70%. And for God's sake, they got people putting together making all the rice they can eat, and they're charging a fortune for these things. Well, not that they're any more than Samsung.
I don't think they're making that much.
Well, their margin historically has been 60 to 65, historically. So when they say something like, "We want to get in the car business," I sit there and go, "Wait a minute, when's the last time Ford or GM made 65% on a car?" All I'm saying is when people go from one to the other, and you've been the guy that has said, by the way, Amazon has done very well in the cloud. They've been making money there. But you're the first person to say, wait a minute, this cloud stuff is actually pretty competitive. They're not alone there. They might have an inroad, but there's people that are competitive in that industry, and nobody's going to pay up for Amazon just because they're Amazon. I mean, you wouldn't. So I'm saying,
yeah, no, I absolutely wouldn't, and they have a lot of cost pressure on their side, and they've met it, and especially with Microsoft being in the business as well, and IBM having gotten into it, and IBM, you know, has managed to do that in a profitable way. So yeah, I think it is a competitive business still, even though it'll probably shake out like a lot of others, where. But you know, the barriers to entry in that are so low.
You need
some servers and some softwares, and you're in the cloud business. So, and there isn't a darn thing that they can do in that, you know, because it really is commodity technology. So there really isn't much that they can do on that. So, you know, what they do is they shift into then, okay, let's get into data storage. Let's get more into analytics. You know, let's start doing some things that are really hard for the small providers to do. And then if they can bundle it, possibly, you know, whether it's legal bundling or not, if they can bundle it, then then that's how they'll squash the little guys.
But Kevin, you're at a level here. I'm going to ask you this question. When you were at Better World Books, and I know you still help those guys out when they need it, but when you were there, you were at a level to where you got to a level, they got to a level, to where you knew what you wanted, you had experimented with various things, and when you went out to do the cloud stuff for those guys, you had essentially a tear sheet that said, this is what I need, this is when I need it, and by the way, I know 8 people that do it, and you essentially went out for bits. But now the very first year, when all of a sudden you guys decided, hey, going out, instead of buying 3 new machines to do it all ourselves, why don't we get some help in September and whatever, January, when we sell all our books. What advantage, I'm guessing that person before Kevin, probably, since you went through Amazon anyway, just took the lazy way out and just bought the cloud from Amazon your first year or two.
Well, that's common. That's like the old days, a long time ago, when they used to say, you'll never go wrong recommending IBM as your solution for mainframe computing. That was always the safe bet. You'd never, they wouldn't make you look bad or anything like that. Now, what I will say is that a lot of it is driven. It's really driven by how the top management is evaluated. Because first of all, if you're on cash flow, and so maybe a startup business or something like that, where you're always worried about conserving cash first and foremost, then you're going to go to the cloud, not because it's cheap, because from a net income standpoint, it may actually be more expensive compared to, say, a depreciation charge, but you don't have to write that big check up front to get going. So that's part of the equation. But then you also start to look at it, and a lot of, especially the non-public companies, are all built around EBITDA. And as a result, you think of what the impact of that is. You're measuring strictly cash flow without considering any capital expenditures. So if you have the money to write the big check, then you write it because, your CEO and CFO's bonuses are going to be paid totally based on, the operating flow of the business. They're going to ignore the capital expenditure and the depreciation, which means you want to write that big check because that's going to be totally off the books and out of your compensation plan.
Well, that's right. Now, how do you, what I'm saying, what happens with these companies, and this, one of the most fascinating things, and I've mentioned this before, one of the reasons why I love the business, because I can't figure it out, is when all of a sudden the market just looks at a place differently. Where eBay was absolutely, it was the Amazon of its time. Meg Whitman made so much money there.
It was Amazon before there was Amazon.
Yeah.
Yep.
Everybody was going to trade everything on eBay, and now this Etsy's run by them on a lot of stuff, and obviously Amazon's run by them on a lot of stuff. You couldn't short the thing. Absolutely cannot short it. And Meg Whitman sold what? I don't know, 100,000 shares a month. She sold her stuff and made so much money. And all of a sudden one day somebody goes, hey, you know what? These guys are just another retailer. Oops. They're going to be, instead of whatever, they're going to be something. And you never know when that day is coming. Someday it's like everybody just wakes up and looks at things. Are we going to get to the point where people look at Tesla and say, it's just another auto company. What are we doing here? And GM is trading, 10 times earnings or 15 or whatever it is, and these guys are God knows what. When does that happen? Or is this Elon Musk got so much other stuff?
Or is it going to happen to Apple, Tom?
Well, same thing.
Because Apple historically, and especially under Jobs, was known as, it was first and foremost an innovation company.
Right.
It was always, what's the new thing? Is that really what's happening at Apple now? Are they coming out with all kinds? They sort of have built a lot around Apple Watches, but that's now, 5 years old? What's the next big thing from Apple, and is there going to be a next big thing?
Well, that was
what Apple did. Apple was always about next big things.
Well, they've done the vertical integration. They've done the monopolist thing, which, they've done the same thing Microsoft's done, and the same thing, really, that Facebook has done. The idea that the App Store is, you can't get in there, you can't have an outside app, I mean, that's blatantly illegal, but they're so big they get away with it. But to me, they're right on the edge now of, they could have problems in China, they could have problems other places, and oh, by the way, people are suing them saying, what about this App Store? I mean, same thing with Microsoft. If you were to say, hey, you can't have Office already embedded in a machine, somebody gets with your stuff on there, and you're already charging people per month for Office. I mean, what are you doing? You can't do that. But obviously they can. They just go ahead and they do it. I mean, and they look at our government. I mean, I haven't watched any convention, but they look at the political landscape, and the chances of anybody enforcing any of this stuff is like me being a jockey today in a seventh race. The organization to do this, unless it's some kind of a political thing where they don't like you, like Trump trying to change the tires on his limousine. Is he going to go around the block and buy some from the Firestone and throw them on there and not have the special made ones? I doubt it. Just saying, but no, you look around and where is any kind of the enforcement action or anything in here in Chicago? Where is it in Illinois? I mean, it's only if you piss off a politician, somebody comes after you, right?
Or if you show up on Lori Lightfoot's block, then you're gonna
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? I mean, it's talk about somebody who doesn't really attach themselves to the rest of the dumb people. But that's what's so interesting about the market right now, or the market all the time. But sometimes you go through these periods like you did in 2000. I'm sure they did when there were railroads. They did when there was TV. I mean, anything that's new. I mean, when is somebody going to say this? Tesla's just an auto company. And oh, by the way, I mean, I'm still not convinced that once the electric cars become even more and more fashionable that you're not going to see a pretty darn good one out of Volkswagen. And then they have a distribution system that's way different, way better than Tesla's.
You'll see that, and I still think that there's a different wave of technology. You know, the focus has always been on taking the existing battery technology and making it making batteries last longer and drive longer. And you know, I think out there in the world there is room for a battery that you just kind of throw flip a little switch, lift it out, and replace it with one that's charged. And I could see, you're instead of a charging station at some place, that you just have, it's like swapping out your propane tank on a gas grill. You pop it out, put in another one, and off you go. And you pay for it, and the other one goes into the charging station, and it's charged up for the next person that shows up.
But why? I'm still not convinced that the Fisker or the Volt technology isn't going to win the day. We have a small diesel engine on there that's very efficient, that is capable of charging the batteries en route on a long trip.
Self-charging, basically.
Right, because that was a Fisker. I mean, that's the whole concept of a railroad locomotive, right? I mean, which is incredibly efficient. They have big diesel engines, essentially create electricity, and all your locomotive, those big engines you see in here, they don't power the wheels at all. There's electric motors on the wheels. A lot of people don't know that, but they're not direct drive. That's what's so beautiful about going and seeing those old steam locomotives. Those things were direct drive. They were alive. They were like organisms. But the maintenance on those things was something you didn't want any part of. I mean, you had people that worked on them. And my grandfather was a boilermaker. He worked on those things. But I mean, the difference. When you see one of those things, you see the amount of parts and the pistons and those big huge arms and stuff and the weight. I mean, you're much better off just making the electricity. Everyone's got every one of those axles that the thing is riding on has a 1,000 horsepower motor on it. 1,000 or 1,200, that's the most you can pretty much put on one without spinning the wheels. And but when you see these big locomotives coming by, all they're doing is creating, matter of fact, a lot of your ships now are the same way. The big motors in the ships, all they do is create electricity for electric motors in the shaft. So I mean that's amazingly efficient. I mean, they have a car that you can't take on vacation. To me, is what use is that? Unless you've got two cars, which a lot of these guys, I think their Tesla is their midlife crisis car. But You see a lot of people in Chicago with them now. But I mean, where's there even a Tesla dealer, Matt? Have you ever seen one?
Yeah, I saw one get looted.
Really? What'd they do, steal a Tesla's?
Is it in River North? No, they just broke all the windows.
That's cool. I don't know about that. I mean, are there charging stations down here? I've never seen one.
Do you need charging stations all over the city.
Do you need 220?
I don't know what that means.
110, 220? You know, you got 110 in your house? In your place? 220 used for your stove, if you have an electric stove? Voltage.
Yeah, I wouldn't know.
We'll have to give you a lesson one day. But yeah, anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when or if this Tesla... And right now they've got all this stuff with the space thing and everything, and they're into this battery technology. It may turn out that even if other people sell electric cars, they got to buy all the batteries for Tesla. So there's a reason why Tesla is not just another car company. But it's someday, you know, maybe they will be. S&P futures down 7, NASDAQ futures down 11. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. S&P futures down 675. NASDAQ futures down 11. We got Dow down 52 bucks. We have, I see a picture of Joe Biden raising his hand, and he and Kamala are big on the copper bracelets. Just saying. A lot of bracelets in that hand over the head. They both got masks on. I like that. Did I think they're both diseased, or what are we doing here? Just saying. DAX up 7. These guys were all down 1% yesterday. DAX up 7. Call that flat. FTSE down 3. Call that flat. CAC around down 5. Call that flat. So, for a down day yesterday, those guys are not making much of a comeback. Nikkei up 39.2%. Shanghai up 16.5. Hang Seng up 322. That's 1.3. So, they've definitely bounced back. Yesterday again, Dow was up 46. S&P was up 10. NASDAQ was up 118. Bonds. 0.63. They're continuing to drop. This rate continues to drop and not go up. If the economy is getting better, most people would tell you these rates would be going the other way. They are not. Bund minus 0.50 and Japan positive 0.03. We have oil, which is hovering around this $42 number. It's up and down, but it's always right around there. 42.28, that's down 50 cents today. Brent down 59. Natural gas 2.31. RBOB minus a penny. I think natural gas is dropping. I think the California situation is getting a little better, so I think the emergency use of gas out there is dropped versus a few days ago. We've got gold down 10 bucks, 1935. Silver down 23 cents, 26.91. Manny, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're very quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no delays to speak of in the area. So if you're heading in, enjoy a nice quiet commute because there are no delays. Weather today, another sunny, warm, nice summer day, a high of 85. Right now it's crystal clear and 69 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, typically 105 doesn't sound cooler, but that'll be about 10 degrees cooler than it's been over the last few weeks, so that'll feel nice. Partly cloudy with a high of 105 today down in Phoenix. Right now it's clear and 84. In sports, the White Sox have now won 5 in a row. They swept the 4-game series versus Detroit, blowing out the Tigers yesterday 9-0. Sox are now 15-11 on the season, and they head to the North Side tonight. Cubs were off yesterday, preparing for a 3-game set at Wrigley to take on the crosstown White Sox. Game 1 tonight between Dallas Keuchel and John Lester is scheduled for 7 o'clock Central Time. Sox 15-11, Cubs 16-8. Both teams firmly in the playoffs if they were to start today as we approach the halfway point of the shortened season. So looking forward to that 3-game set beginning tonight at Wrigley. Diamondbacks lost to the A's 5-1. And the other big sports story was the NBA draft lottery took place last night. The Minnesota Timberwolves won the number 1 overall pick. The Bulls are slotted in at number 4. We're used to them drafting number 7. I believe they drafted 7 either 3 or 4 straight years. But they're number 4, so they should be able to get a quality player there.
Would you? I don't remember the college season. Who?
The Suns are at number 10. Chief.
Who can you get it for? The Bulls need like 8 people, though.
They do. Well, I know Lonzo Ball's little brother, who didn't play college. I think he might have got kicked out or something of UCLA. He's considered one of the top guys.
He's in Europe, right?
Yeah, I think he went and played in Europe or China or something for a year before COVID. But I don't know. I'd have to do a little research. Like you said, college basketball is such a distant memory now. We'll have to see. I know Anthony Edwards is a guy a lot of people are talking about as well, who was a shooting guard out of Georgia, 6'5 shooting guard out of University of Georgia, who's considered a kind of a can't miss guy who played one season in college.
Does this year count as a year, Kevin?
Say that again.
Does this year, if you were a junior, are you now going to be a senior? Or did this year count as a year, half a year that it was?
Well, it wasn't a half year. They made it to the end of the regular season. It was the tournaments that got canceled.
Okay, so it's a real year.
Yeah, so it definitely counts.
So if you're
I don't think that's an issue. What I think from the bowl standpoint you need to start looking at is once the top couple of college players go, who are the best international players in the draft?
Yeah, and the Bulls' new GM, that's his specialty, and he built Denver by getting a lot of really good international talent and then getting some high upside guys, and now Denver's, you know, a top six or seven team in the league that he built from scratch, and I wouldn't be surprised if he kind of does the same thing with the Bulls here.
Denver's not that good.
Yeah, so are we looking for like the next team Luka Doncic or something like that? Will be interesting to see.
Yeah, but the sixth best team in the league never goes anywhere.
Well, you're right about that. You have to have like a transcendent talent to win it all. We know that, like a LeBron or a Kawhi Leonard or Anthony Davis or guys like that, to really compete for a championship. But unless you have one of those, there's a next tier down of really, really good teams. And Denver would be in that category that just has a bunch of really, really good, you know, all-star level or just below all-star level players, but doesn't have that one star that can win a title. Those are just hard to come by.
Hey, after watching all those games in the, you know, the Jordan series and all that stuff and watching just all those playoff games, we had nothing else to watch, right? I don't know, there's no answer to this, but what seems to me that those guys, first of all, the games were a lot rougher than they are now, it seems to me. A lot more contact.
Oh, yeah.
Why the hell were those guys, and this guy, Lauri Markkanen, is out 40 games a year, every year. These dudes are always hurt. And yet in those days, the guys seemed to play it every night. And they had to be much more banged up in terms of bruised than you are today. I mean, I'm not saying if you get a knee injury, you get a knee injury, or you break a wrist, you break a wrist. But I'm talking about just in terms of bumps and bruises, there had to be no comparison. Jordan never sat out. Pippen never sat out. I mean, I'm just, you know, there's no answer to this. It just seems to me that we have guys that are constantly on the list, and I never see him play any defense. How are they getting hurt? Just saying. No answer.
Well, you're right. It isn't from playing defense.
I don't know what's so different about it. Maybe when you're playing all that defense, maybe you're actually moving slower. I don't know, but it just seems odd. Even in baseball now, I mean, with all the...
Well, but on the other hand, you do have, you know, our point of view is a little bit skewed, you know, from the Jordan years. And even Pippen, even though, you know, as we saw in the Last Dance, he was out half of that season. And
he missed tons of time.
And, of course, he had the famous migraine headache incident, which, you know, I'm not criticizing, by the way, because if you've ever had a migraine problem, it's
a problem, yeah.
You know, it can have you barfing and, you know, all kinds of things. So, you know, I'm not criticizing. I'm just saying it's kind of famously there as a did not play in a key situation. You know, we're kind of spoiled by that. When you think about it, does LeBron James ever miss?
No, it really doesn't seem like it.
You know, Kawhi Leonard ever miss?
I'm saying they're your guys.
You can go down the list. Up until he got a couple injuries in a row, you know, did Seth Curry go 6-7 years without ever missing games? Yeah.
Well, I also think
the great players rarely ever get hurt for some reason, and they rarely miss time. It's for some, and I can't explain it. I mean, Michael Jordan had essentially one season where he broke his foot, and that was it. He basically played between 75 and 82 games every year.
And then add on Olympic years and things like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. LeBron's the same way. I mean, LeBron, as he's gotten older now, he's 20 years in the league now. They've almost had to force him to take some time off and nurse some things that he would normally play through because he never missed games and went to the finals every year. But for some reason, I don't know why, if it's just their genetics and that's why they're so good or what, but they never
seem to get hurt. Well, I would speculate, and this is just a theory, I can't prove anything. But that part of what makes them great is, you know, say, that we think of athletic gifts as speed and leaping ability and things like that. But I think, you know, stuff like balance, how you land when you jump, how peripheral peripheral vision, you know, feeling things coming at you that others don't because you have a better peripheral vision. I think when you start allowing for those kinds of things, that it, you know, it just keeps more stuff from happening. And that's, those are traits that great players have. And you know, I just suspect that if it were really studied, that we would discover that a lot of those things that we just don't take notice of most of the time really, really matter in staying healthy throughout the course of game after game.
I think you're probably right about that. And also, they're sometimes I think they're so much better. When you look at, like, even Ryan Sandberg, who played pretty much every year, there had to be days where he was at 80% of capacity, but at 80% he was still better than the guy next to him. You know, which, you know, is, that wouldn't be me. I'm lucky to be out there 100%, right? But, I mean, those guys were... I mean, Mickey Mantle, how good did the guy have to be to play on that knee? Or Bobby Orr?
I mean, I agree. There's also, you know, there is something to say for willpower, too. And that, you know, who had more, you know, just sheer will, sheer, you know, too damn stubborn to lose, to not play, whatever, than Jordan.
Yeah.
And, you know, that had to factor in there as well.
But they're you know, we've seen other guys.
How many times did we see Jordan play a great game when he had flu symptoms? How many times did we see Walter Payton play a great game when he wasn't, you know, wasn't up to par? Because these guys were just such incredible competitors.
Well, you can add Andre Dawson to that list.
Yeah.
You can certainly add Sandy Koufax to that list. The guy's arm was like falling off, for God's sake. I mean, those, you know, obviously Mickey Mantle. I mean, a lot of people, when they got later in their careers, I mean, the guys that were not hurt at all, guys like, well, didn't seem to be, guys like Al Kaline and Musial and those kinds of guys, or Frank Howard. I mean, Frank, who's the guy who's still in baseball, the guy who won the Triple Crown. Frank, the wacky batting style.
Frank Robinson?
Yeah. I mean, and those guys, they never seemed to really, like you say, ever really seemed to get hurt. But other people actually played hurt, and you know, how do you play outfield in the major leagues with a bad knee? I mean, I can't imagine that. I mean, and not even really show it much. I mean,
you didn't even want me in your outfield with a good knee.
No. Well, you know, then there's the Sunday morning softball. Bob runs the league. Bob puts himself at shortstop one day. Now, Bob is an older gentleman. So if you throw it right to him, he'll catch it, and he can still hit it, you know, type of thing. But he is new. He's like putting me at shortstop. Worked out perfectly, Kevin. 9 innings, never got a ball. So it's all a question of...
So that's being hidden in the most obvious place.
Yeah, hidden, what do they call that? Hidden in plain sight or something like that?
Yeah.
But you can put me out in right field. As long as nobody hits it out there, I'm fine. You know? Just saying. But now, if they find me, now that's another problem. That's the thing. In softball, you can find people. In hardball, it's kind of hard to do that. Although, I suppose... That was the difference between kind of the Madden year, when they won the World Series, and the next year that they didn't. I mean, I think they caught... I mean, Maddie will disagree with me on this, but when Madden, he was big on moving people around and putting people in different positions, right? Well, it always seemed like that one year... If all of a sudden he took, like, Hayward out and put, who was his favorite guy? The guy, the older guy that took the year off because his wife was getting divorced, and tell us his name. He just retired, Manny. Ben,
Zobrist?
World Series MVP, Ben Zobrist.
Yeah. So all of a sudden, you know, you put, Ben Zobrist out in right field. Well, in 2016, the guy never got a ball. But it seemed like in 2017, the next tough chance went right to right field. And then you'd say, gee, Hayward would have gotten that ball and Zobrist didn't. I mean, a lot of this is, you know, I won't say luck, but fortune. And if things are going...
Also, there's always a luck factor in there. There absolutely is.
I mean, football, I don't think there's a luck factor in any given battle in the line. Right? If you got an all-pro tackle that's not letting the guy in, he's pretty much winning every battle, right? But that doesn't mean... His guy won't miss or hit the post on 4 field goals, and they still lose.
Well, that's a luck factor.
Yeah.
Certainly, that, you know, whether you hit the post and it doinks through or it doesn't, or you double doink
double doink
famously in the case of the Bears. But there's also, you know, I would chalk it up to luck if you say, you know, you got a guy who makes almost every block, but the time he missed a block was also the time his guy ran out of the play because it was going in the other direction. There are factors like that too. And I know in basketball, if you follow the Pomeroy stuff, that he actually did make an attempt to quantify that, and that factors in. But you know so in luck in basketball, for instance, is, you know, you're taking a 3-point shot to win or lose. Does it go through or not? Well,
right.
There is a luck factor to that because yes, it's skill to shoot it, but you know some of them are gonna miss. Everybody, you know, nobody is a 100% shooter, even wide open. So you have to deal with that, but at the same time, if you put yourself in a position to do a catch and shoot, you get your guy open, you set a nice screen, you get your guy open, you penetrate, you get a good pass to him and all that, that mititates the luck component of it and turns it more into skill.
Plus, it wasn't lucky that you made it.
By the same token, you can just catch and throw one up because you just don't have any time, and it goes in. Well, would you say that's a skillful shot, or you just said, I got the damn thing up by the rim and hope to God it went in? That's luck.
But it wasn't luck to be in that position within 1 point after 48 minutes.
Agreed. Yeah, you put yourself in a position to win. It could have been bad play. You could be, you know, trying to bail out against a lesser team.
Well, I mean, how many times?
You know, what I'm saying is, of course, luck is a factor. You want to mitigate that as much as you can throughout the course of the game, but how many times have you seen a basketball team just go off that everything that they shot went in, a totally abnormal percentage?
Well, that happens.
I would put that into the luck factor as well.
Well, that happens. I mean, you've seen that playing softball. But hey, speaking of luck, I was looking at changing the page here. Before the break, I was talking about Amazon and Walmart. But this is not luck. I mean, when you're trading and so forth, it's not luck. But when you see somebody that Amazon now is a favorite, it's obviously a favorite. They've had nothing but advantages. But now we're at the point. The earnings per share on a stock is trading, like, it's up there. It's like 3,300. It's like it's a real number. Well, in 2017, they made $6. 2018, they made 20. 2019, they made 23. The last four quarters are up to 26. And I'm going to say this year they're going to make, let's say, 40. So 40 goes into 33 something. We're talking 80 sometimes earnings. Now, they have every advantage on earth. That might be a buy there. I mean, I think what you need to do is you need to at least know what these numbers are so you're comfortable with them. So you look at Walmart, this year it looks like they're going to make, you know, I'm going to say $7 a share, maybe more, and the stock's trading 130. So you're talking, you know, not even 20 times. So that doesn't mean that Walmart's Amazon. But I'm saying if you're going to look at these things relatively and be much more of a retail analyst than I am, you've got to be comfortable and say, that's okay. And Amazon is worth 80 times earnings, and Walmart's only worth 20. I mean, by the way, you could know this way better than me, and you could be right. But I'm saying at least know what those numbers are before you make your trade, is all I'm saying. And I'm not saying one's the other versus the other, because I'm not a big retail trade sort of guy. I mean, I'm more of an index guy, but then there's a few stocks a lot of stocks I watch because my clients have them. I don't have a lot of people at Amazon, I don't have a lot of people at Walmart. But I'm just looking at this morning because we were talking about it on the show, and yesterday we actually had a couple questions about earnings per share. So, I mean, which one's right, which one's not? You know, Tesla, what do they need to make versus another? I mean, you've got GM making, you know, I'm going to say 10, 12 times earning at Tesla, way more. At least don't be blind to it. I mean, at least know what you're doing. And you could absolutely be correct by say, hey, look, 20 years from now, everybody in the world that has electric cars is going to have a Tesla battery in there. You could be right. I don't know. It could very well be. And when they could be way more profitable just selling batteries than ever did cars. Or they could be sending everybody to the moon, and everybody wants to take a ride to the moon. I mean, there's all kinds of things they could do and reasons why. But we're talking about 20 versus 80. Now, would you still be comfortable if Walmart dropped to 15 and Tesla and Amazon went to 100? I mean, where's your break point? You know, and that's where's your personal break point? We'll find out if and when the market's break point's there. Doesn't seem to be there yet, but this is kind of what you have to look at, Kevin. And the thing of it is, there's no answer to it. There's no way I can say, hey, what the hell are you doing? You know, you should be buying Walmart at 20 and that and be shorting the hell out of Amazon or whatever. No, there's no right or wrong there, Kevin. At least for the next month or two or year, 3 years from now, if Amazon's still making $40 a share, I don't believe that stock will be $3,300. Not even close. But there's a chance that if Walmart's still here, 20 is a little high for a retailer, but maybe they drop to 17 or 18. They're still going to be, if it's consistent and they pay a dividend, maybe that's good enough, you know, with interest rates the way they are. You know what I'm saying? But there's all kinds of questions there, and the answers aren't all that obvious. I mean, you understand what I'm talking about?
No. So, you know, from my point of view, not being, involved as a any kind of market analyst, I just look at the business itself and say, you know, who, especially in with the turn of events of 2020, who was positioned to do well in it? And you know, to me, the answer is, you know, clearly Amazon, clearly Walmart, who I've been telling you for several years has been gearing up to compete with Amazon. And especially with a really solid ability to order online and go pick up with minimal effort, that's been good for Walmart. And then, you know, we talked the same, when we were talking about Target the other day, and I sent you an article about that, and that was because, in Target's case, they've been systematically converting some of their retail stores into part warehouse, part warehousing operation and part, part retail, you know, through the traditional retail operation. And as a result of that, they have a leg up. They have a pretty good head start. They're not as far along the line as Walmart was in making that conversion, but they are pretty far down the road when it comes to supporting online sales, to supporting pickup in urban areas, which I think is important because, where I live, they just put it on the porch and go. And we don't worry about someone taking your stuff. But certainly if you live in the city of Chicago, unless you're on a protected block like where Lori Lightfoot lives, you're just kind of, they can't leave stuff. You have to go pick it up somewhere, especially if it's valuable. So, that puts an operation like Walmart or what Target's doing in pretty good position.
Well, in our neighborhood, they do drop it on a porch. Most people have vestibules, but they actually have zip codes where the company will say, go ahead and do that. And I think the company eats it if somebody takes it.
Oh yeah, they have to. So yeah. It's a risk play all the way. So what's the cost of staffing up? What's the cost in lost sales if you won't just leave it? And then you add it all up, and you're just doing it's just math at that point.
Well, again, I'm looking at these numbers, and I mean, once in a while I do like to look at this stuff and run it through for the listeners. Is Amazon in 2019? The EPS was 23. All right, so this year, I'm giving them a break, and I'm saying it's going to be 40. So say it's up, 80%. Well, the stock's doubled. All right, so now some of this stuff is anticipation of doing, but now next year, if they make 80, does the stock double again, or does the PE start to come down? I mean, these are the things you have to think about.
The way I look at it is the competition for Amazon is increasing, where they've kind of had this online retailing space, not 100% to themselves, but they've had this dominant position, and I think they have some serious competitors now, some people with the staying power to just slug it out with them.
Well, but you also, there's always. You are correct, Kevin. And that's what I'm saying. These are all factors. The other factor is, let's say, somebody has a Tesla, all right, so pick on those guys. Let's say they have a, I don't know what their PE is, I didn't look theirs up, but say it's a 50 PE, it's probably more than that. But say it's a 50 PE, and you sit there and go, well, hey, they're going to get this government contract next year, and if they do, they're going to make all this money, so next year, this price will be like it was a 25 PE. So it's up there for a reason. It's like when you're building the railroad. Well, the minute the trains start running, aren't you going to start making money? Okay, I get it. But now next year, if they get the contract and they're making the dough, does the stock triple? Because it's still 50 PE. Now it's in anticipation of what? Now, right now, you know, the Amazon, you got to ask yourself, when does this amazing premium stop? When's the year going to happen where they actually do double their earnings and the stock's down or unchanged? Because that will come a time. I mean, it's not like these guys will be making $200 a share and the stock's going to be 10,000. I don't think. You know, I guess it could happen, but so you have to ask yourself,
from inflation.
Yeah, well, yeah, but when does it? I mean, because you look at the eBay, which is a perfect example of how it, all of a sudden one day, you know, somebody else is doing this stuff. Now you're mentioning the Walmart and the Target. You know, I don't see the Ma and Pa's coming back too much here. I mean, are these other guys all toast? I mean, Lord and Taylor's closing their last stores.
Well, I mean, think of it in the grocery business. How many localized grocery chains are there, and how are they going to be able to respond to this? Because there's a lot of people that are now buying groceries online, and you know, Target's in a pretty good spot, except that they don't do any like they don't run a custom butcher shop or anything like that. But but you know you can order online in Target, and then you can go in, you can pick out your own meat and produce, and everything else is waiting for you by the checkout line, and so your shopping experience just got much more convenient. Or you can just order everything and have it delivered. You know, but how many times do you go in a different store where they have online shopping, and what do you see? People going up and down the employees going up and down the aisles, picking out groceries, filling up a grocery cart for some online order. That's totally inefficient. It's not cost effective at all, and so they are either going to have to change or they won't be competitive. So that's the next question is, who understands retailing, retail distribution, and who doesn't? And I think that's where you start picking out your winners and losers as we go forward.
Kevin, quick question. Did the Irish cancel football season yesterday, ACC?
No, I don't think so. In fact, they just announced a game against South Florida.
Okay, because that was a rumor.
A September game after their scheduled opener with Duke.
Okay. Yeah, that's
well. So, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen there. Hey, put 10 or 12,000 people in an enclosed space, introduce the virus to one person, and see what happens. Duh.
Well, we managed to go through all those riots without, or all the people rioting don't get tested. We don't care about them.
Yeah, I believe that.
Anyway, thanks, Kevin. Talk to you next week. SP Futures now down 19. As if you're just down 52, the sell-off's getting kind of real here. Be right back, Professor Helsner.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Low and Rope Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber on the board.
Hello?
SP Futures down 21.
Oh.
NASDAQ Futures down 58. And we have Professor Hal Snar, back by popular demand, going to tell us all about what's going on in the world. And he's teaching current events to his people and know exactly what's happening and what they should buy, what they should sell. And he's the man of the hour. That's you, Hal.
Wow. I wish I knew this guy.
Yeah, you're the man. You're a professor. You ever see the guy at Gilligan's Island, the professor, not know something?
Yeah, well, he knew a lot, man. He knew how to make a radio out of bananas, right?
Yeah, plus he got to choose between Ginger and Marianne virtually every day.
Yeah, you know, what are you, Tom? I'm a more Marianne.
Oh, me too, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. She'd play on our softball team with us. I don't think Ginger would.
Yeah, my wife is more of a Marianne, too. Well, yeah, I think she is. My wife isn't into interior design. I don't come home and have 1,000 knickknacks on the shelves that she purchased on Amazon.com. So I think my wife is definitely a Marianne. So,
well, that's
however, she does wear high heels when we go camping.
Well, you know.
Because she is from Brooklyn, right, man?
Well, yeah,
she lived in Manhattan
yeah,
as well.
There was this, back in the politically incorrect floor, there was this young lady, Laura, I'll say her first name. She was a riot. And, very, very New Yorkish, so we say. And she always wore these super high heels on the floor because she was not very tall. So she said she was going fly fishing, where the guy says to her, "Where do you buy high-heeled hip boots?"
Well, that's a joke that goes around my brothers. My brothers all live in Idaho, and they bring that up every time they see my wife. So, but my wife does not have a New York accent at all. Unless she's mad. When she's mad, I know how to walk away because that Brooklyn accent comes out.
Oh,
so that's when I know that things are bad and I should probably stop being me and try to be nice.
I think you probably get the same thing out of Maria Bartiromo because she's a Jersey girl. And I
I bet
I bet you she's pissed off, she drops
Maria
you into pure jersey.
Looks like she could be pretty fiery.
Oh, yeah. Man, well, it's not so bad. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. Hey, it's not. Not
speaking
at all.
Of fiery, what's with this economy? Is any nobody seems to believe anything they hear. Have you ever seen, I mean, there's been many of these days, but yesterday I thought was the most amazing example of only five or six stocks going up. It had to be the narrowest rally I think I've ever seen in the 40 years I've been in business. It was just the six stocks.
It's amazing. But, you know, I was asked to sit down on a Zoom chat with a former PhD candidate who teaches out in California. He was teaching an MBA class, and he asked me to, you know, jump in a Zoom chat. And I said, sure. So I talked to his students, and at the time I said, buy Hilton, Carnival, Delta, and Wynn, because, you know, the companies aren't going away. And I just checked. Hilton's up 50% from its bottom in March. Carnival's up 56%. Delta's up 29%. And Wynn's up 87%. Unfortunately, I didn't put my money where my mouth is. I didn't buy any of those.
Well,
I think maybe some of those MBA students did. I don't know. Hopefully they did.
But, Hal, this has been, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you today. If you look at, of course, I'm going brain dead. I forget the name of the stock. One of my first used to trade for me, and I've known the guy since where we used to play basketball in high school together, calls me yesterday, and he's still got some stock in this place. They're the guys that bought Ticketmaster. They own all the, what's the name of the place, man? They own a lot of the big arenas. LF something's on the stack. I mean, I had to put the stack up here. LYV. What is that? Let me look and see. I have the technology here.
You have the technology to rebuild him?
Well, not exactly. Live. What are these guys? Live something something. Live. Not Live Nation. What are the guys that do the tickets and they do the arenas and stuff now? He says the stack was 70. It dropped exactly what you're talking about, Sal. And he says it dropped. Let me get the graph up here. The stock was trading 75. All this stuff happened and drops to like 25. Now it's bounced back in the low 50s and has hung there for 8 weeks. And his question to me was, Chief, what the hell? They're losing money every day. Why is this thing hanging at 50? What are people think is going to have happen? Or is somebody convinced that there's going to be a vaccine in like 4 weeks? I mean, because right now, if they keep losing the money every day, they're like an airline. A year from now, there's nothing there. I mean, why is this thing hanging at 50? Why isn't it 12 or 20? Just what you said. A lot of these stocks that are just draining dropped by a tremendous amount. They dropped by probably 60%, and they've all bounced back 25% or 30%, and now they're just hanging. Question's why?
What? Live Nation's up from about 38.
Yeah, well, no, okay, did
the low, March, the low, or 33 in March.
The low tick was like 24.
Yeah.
On
well,
one
I
day.
Think a lot of the stock market is just the money that's been created. That's all. I mean, a lot of this is just the money creation. I mean, we got $3-4 trillion in debt created by the president and the Congress, the Fed. I looked at M1 yesterday. Holy Nikes!
Yeah.
Man, alive, as the Fed created some M1. And then the excess reserves, they were headed towards zero, but they're back to where they were around the financial crisis. So the Fed has created all kinds of money, and who gets that money first? You know, the everyday Joe doesn't get that money first. The money gets put in the hands of people who buy Apple, buy stocks, and they benefit from all the money printing before average Joe American does. So
very serious.
I mean, we got some money from the Treasury back in, I don't know, March. We had four kids, so we got a pretty good chunk of change, $4,000. But I think I'd rather be on the other end, you know, where I can buy a bunch of Apple and Amazon, which have done well because. I mean, who's selling when nobody else is? Amazon and Apple, right?
Well, Apple is not really had that. I mean, they've done better than people thought they would, but they're not having a breakout year.
Well, I think Apple, though. I think what's going on with Apple is, you know, kids are on their iPhones,
right?
And they're watching iTechnology, iShows, or whatever you call them. I don't have an iPhone. I have a 10-year-old Samsung. So,
by the way, Samsung's coming out with a new phone today. They will get no free press though, like Apple would.
Yeah, well, I'll buy that new Samsung phone in 5 years. when I can get it for about $100 on eBay.
There you go. Hey, I have a very professorial question. Because I go back and, you know, I research inflation more than most people since I lived through the first one. The first one here that in my lifetime. Why is it that when this happened before, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, when the Fed started pouring money into the system, it immediately went to longer-term rates. It went into people's inflationary expectations, and the market actually... Well, the market was up for a while. But I'm going to say during the late 60s, the market ran up. Okay, but then as soon as it started to reflect itself in longer-term rates going up, people would rather do that than put it in the market. So it actually had a detrimental effect on the market because your long-term rates were 12%. I mean, you know, why would you put money in the market if you could do that? Unless you found, you know, the Amazon or something. So, but other places like Weimar Republic, Iran, Venezuela, the market just shot up. The money that they poured into the place every day sort of like didn't have time to make it into the interest rates. Interest rates never really went very far, but the market, well, the currency in Weimar went from like $2 went to, you know, $2,000. The market went from 200 to 2 million. So the market kept pace in those dollars. The same thing happened in Venezuela, Iran, when they had the massive inflation a year ago. The stock market had gone up by like 10 times in Iranian currency, not in U.S. currency. Why this time? Is that just because the Fed is buying the long end as well? They're just overwhelming the entire market. Why would anybody right now, given what has happened in inflation the last couple of months and what I think has been happening a while, and anybody's expectation now, if you got your eyes open at all, why would anybody lend anybody money at like 3% or 2% for 30 years? I mean,
it's just nuts. I mean, I think if you look at the history of interest rates in the United States from the 1970s to now, it's a monetary story. I mean, the Fed is just, you know, printing money. And when you just print money every year, like it has since the 1970s, it's going to push down the price of money, which is the interest rate.
Well, but so, I mean, I'm sure when you teach, you say that long-term rates are equal to the real rate of interest, which is they've kept it pretty darn low, plus the inflation. I mean, does anybody think that given what these guys are doing, we're pushing a 40% rise in M2 this year. Does anybody think that inflation is going to be 2% 3 years from now? I mean, somewhere during the life of that 30-year bond, that thing's going to be trading 50, in my estimation.
Yeah. Well, the thing about inflation is I think the Austrians have it right. Paul Krugman was, I think, on the New York Times a couple years ago. I actually commented on it. I wrote a Mises Wire counter to what he was saying. And a lot of mainstream economists and guys like Paul Krugman, who, in my opinion, is no longer an economist, he's a political commentator, you know, they conflate what Austrians consider inflation. Austrians consider inflation to be money growth, whereas most mainstream economists consider a demand shock to be inflation, aggregate demand jumping out to be inflation, pushing price levels up. To me, that's not inflation. That's just markets trying to let prices work, right? So when the price level jumps, not a result of excess of money supply, when the price level jumps because maybe demand is shocked and people start feeling much better about their lives and they go out and purchase things, you'll see the price level rise. But I don't consider that inflation. So this whole inflation thing, when we look at M1 right now and it's going straight up, that's future inflation. But I think the problem with inflation right now is that you have all these governments buying into modern monetary theory. And so you have a race to the bottom in who's going to be the worst currency. And the United States is probably maybe it's the least worst currency. So people want to hold it for that reason. And so I think that is helping explain what's going on here. It's the least worst. It's a competition for the worst. And the winter is the least worst currency, and I would say that's the U.S. dollar.
But why do these people that call themselves modern monetary theorists or whatever, even people on our Fed, I refuse to believe that these guys are dumb people. I mean, is it any question in anybody's mind that if you just double the amount of money in circulation, all you do is double the price of everything? I mean, and if you owe me $20, you now owe me $40. I mean, right? I mean,
I think there's very little critical thinking going on. I actually deleted my Twitter page and my Facebook page. I just deleted it because I got really sick and tired of having conversations with people who don't want to have a conversation. They just post their talking points from their favorite politician on the left or the right, and I'm not having a conversation with a person. I'm having a conversation with talking points. So I think there's very little critical thinking going on. I think that's why viewpoints are so counter viewpoints, whether you're on the left or the right, are so despicable today. People get offended on the left from comments on the right, and people on the right get offended from people on the left because very little critical thinking is going on. People, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's social media, maybe it's Twitter that's feeding this. But you can't have a conversation today without upsetting people. And in my money and banking class, I told them Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning that in this class, you're going to be exposed to a lot of different views. You might not like those views. And then I showed them a video of President Obama in 2015, I believe, talking to people in Iowa about the benefits of conversation on a college campus. And you'd be surprised how great this video is. I mean, because he's talking about, you know, people who are progressive on a college campus not being offended by conservative speech on campus. So I show that video all the time because the former president is talking about, hey, when you go to college, you're going to be exposed to views you disagree with. But you don't silence them. You don't riot and loot because they're on your campus speaking. You engage in a conversation with them. You go back and forth, and when that happens, we win. But when that doesn't happen, we lose. And I think that's what's going on.
Well, we're losing. You could be an Einstein and with 90 pages of mathematics come to a conclusion that probably can't be challenged, but the rest of us are not Einstein.
I know. Yeah.
I will say that I have somewhat of an ego in the sense that I think I can manage people's money protectively probably better than anybody. I mean, why wouldn't I think that? But yeah, I also know that I've never learned anything from anybody I totally agreed with either.
Yeah. I told my students in money and banking during that same line of conversation, you're going to be, when you're at a place where your views are counter to the mainstream views, like, you know, being libertarian or conservative on a very progressive liberal arts campus, it makes you stronger, right?
Right.
I mean, if you're a conservative religious person and you come to a liberal arts college that doesn't embrace those kinds of ideas, you can either wither and die or you can get stronger. And if you don't want to get stronger, maybe you should have chosen to go to Liberty University where everybody shares your views. If you're a conservative Christian and you go to Liberty University, are you going to get all that much more? Are you going to be challenged? Are you going to swim against the current? No, you're going to go with it. Swimming with the current is easy. It's when you have to swim against the current and you have to learn how to navigate those waters successfully, that's when there's real growth. And there's so many people who are swimming with the current and they're not very strong in their views. And that, I think that's an opportunity for me to change minds about freedom and liberty. And
well, why hell is the tyranny starting to come from the left? I never, when I was at Notre Dame, it was a long time ago. It was kind of the bastion of liberal Catholicism. I mean, they challenged the Vatican. They did this. They had mass a different way. They had all kinds of things. They would sing, songs in the church that you would only really hear in the Ebenezer Baptist Church any other place. I mean, they were amazingly liberal in terms of social things. Even though it looked like it was a lily white school, people were actually very forgiving. They there was never any sort of a racial thing. It was, to be a matter of fact, pretty much the opposite. And but there were people that were conservative, and I never. It was never a tyrannical thing. It wasn't like, oh my God, there's a Christopher Columbus statue here. I think we should tear it down, and if you don't agree with me, like, you're an ass, and you know, type of thing. You're anybody who disagrees, say, hey, look, the guy was an explorer. Just leave it there. We never said he was a good guy. I mean, you know, what's that got to do with a statue? We're celebrating the fact that he got on three ships that you and I wouldn't sail across Lake Michigan in. But we never said he was a good guy. We never said we want to have a dinner with the guy. We never said that, right? I mean, we said.
Well, history. How do you know? Yeah. How do you know how far you've come if you don't know your history?
Right.
That's the important thing about history, is you learn where you were, and then you can evaluate where you're at today. And I think we're a lot better than we were, you know, 400 years ago, 200 years ago, 100 years ago, even 50 years ago. I think we're much better.
If
my life as a professor is so much easier today. I got two monitors in my office.
Yeah.
I got about 50 web browsers open, right? I'm looking at all kinds of stuff. My life is so much better than it was 20 years ago.
Well, I don't ever want, I mean, I obviously abhor slavery. I also abhorred indentured servitude, which is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
I pretty much abhorred the company store where you had to buy your stuff from the company, which was darn near slavery, right?
Well, that happens still to this day in parts of Idaho. My dad worked as a potato farmer for a big farm, 50,000-acre farm in Du Bois, Idaho. And the guy that owned the farm owned the store. So
yeah, well, I mean, what I'm saying is the people who built the railroad, the Asian people who built the railroad, they never cared if any of those people died along the way. I mean, a day in the life of a human being.
Or the Irish. Irish.
Going the other way. Or building the canal. I'm saying a day in the life of a human being in the 1800s, unless you were like one of the really upper crust, and even those guys got diseases now we routinely get a penicillin or an antibiotic shot for, that they died for at 20. So a day in the life in the 1800s was not so hot for anybody. So
even for John Rockefeller, I'd rather be me today than Johnny Rockefeller then, right?
Yeah.
Rockefeller can't listen to Metallica. I've been listening to Metallica's Manchester, England live concert for a week, man. I can't get enough of it.
I bet he
was Rockefeller, I couldn't listen to that.
I bet he had none of his teeth by the time he was 40.
Yeah.
I mean, what I'm saying is, but this is, you know what this reminds me of? Now, the left, it wants to rub out history. You know, and I don't get that. I mean, I understand people use the N-word in Mark Twain's books, but he did it because it was a period piece. I don't ever want to forget that. I don't want to go back to it at all, but I want that to be a lesson of how we don't want to do things.
Well, the French Revolution was all about that, right?
Yeah.
They replaced Christian symbols with, secular symbols. So, I mean, the Marxist revolutions, in my opinion, are always about tearing down symbols. The Nazis took down symbols of Christianity inside churches and put up Nazi flags.
Yeah.
So, you know, a revolution is always about, I mean, whenever a dictator takes over, they have to erase the history. And that's usually characteristic of all these revolutions where a dictator takes over. They erase the history.
But
right?
The left,
in China, they did that, right?
Well, you know,
they did that in China.
You think the people on the left that are doing this, and again, I'm always accused of being, I'm way more on the liberal side of center than I am the other side, but except when it comes to money. You know who's the master at this was Joe Stalin.
Yeah. Mao was too.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, but
the French revolutionaries were the same way.
But now, if I took.
Except they beheaded the holders of the history, right?
Well, but say you came to Chicago and we went out for adult beverages like we did the last time you were here. There's a big picture of everybody taken at the table if the series ever opens again. And you're sitting next to me. And all of a sudden we say, hey, we don't like this Hal anymore. And we decide to rub you out. Well, not only do I have to knock you off physically, somebody have to send them out to your college, and we've got to get you out of all the yearbooks from every year that you were there. We've got to get you out of the picture over at the series, right? They would rub the guy out of history, which is sort of what the left wants to do now. I mean, right?
Well, it's 1984.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't control the people unless... I mean, if people know how bad it was in the past and how good it is today, there's no revolution. So you have to erase that. You have to erase that time period where it was really not very good, right? I always tell my students at Macro Principles, man, the lowest on the totem pole. Some of the lowest in the totem pole today in the United States. Maybe the people in the bottom 20% near the top of the bottom 20% of the income distribution. They have it better than Queen Elizabeth I.
Right.
They do. They have it better than her. They you know, most people have smartphones. Queen Elizabeth did not have a smartphone.
She was probably better for it.
Right. She didn't have it. It took her a month to get to Paris.
But she
people in the 20% tell can go to Paris pretty cheap.
Okay, but
quicker too.
Which is worse, having to order something on Amazon or tell one of your flunkies to go get it for you?
Yeah. Well, what could Queen Elizabeth's flunkies get for Queen Elizabeth?
Well,
they could get the minstrels together and maybe, or they could get the actors together and put on a Shakespeare play. But I can watch Shakespeare on YouTube, man.
All I know is that the ladies who were the staff for the Speaker of the House in the late 50s, with regular typewriters and copying machines, produced more bills per year than the people do now with all these computers and everything else. So somewhere
actually,
along
I would like a machine that would slow that whole process down.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is people manage to... I managed to get a softball game or a basketball game together every night, calling people's houses, and then the mom answered the phone and said, hey, tell Joe the game's at 7 o'clock, and she'd say, okay. We without texting or anything, we all managed to make it there somehow.
Yeah.
All right, so what is the... we don't seem to have anybody, you know... First of all, I congratulate you for getting that money, Hal, because normally, and this is so south side here, when I tell people that here, they say, what are you talking about? I've never taken anything from anybody. But this is the first time, Hal, in a year, a month ago, I've never said anything like this. You need to get this money, even if you don't feel you deserve it, because if you don't get it, you're not going to stay even, because they're debasing the currency that you have in your bank account at an incredibly rapid pace. It's like if I use the example, if we circled a little, you know, circled your little town in Salt Lake City, I'm saying a little bit of a smaller town, maybe you don't, and somebody decides to put $100 worth of every day in somebody's mailbox. And if we watched that town, all of a sudden you'd see a few more boats, you'd see a couple of new cars. Nobody knows where it's coming from. But all of a sudden everybody's getting cash. And maybe, you know, the price of stuff is going up, would be my guess. But the last thing you want to do, Hal, is say this is ridiculous and take out your mailbox. Because if you don't stay even, that's what happened with these people all overseas that didn't pay taxes. They got so far ahead of everybody else, they're never looking back. All these companies we're talking about now are all companies that did that, where other people are paying 35% and they're paying 5%. And over a period of a decade, they're so big now we don't know what to do. They're bigger than governments. What about the guys from Lyft and Uber? I mean, I'm not a Law and Order guy to beat the band. When you're so big that they say that you have to make your people, I don't know whether they should be employees or not, I haven't gone through the court documents. The government says these people are really employees. And they say, screw you, we're going on strike, and the judge backs off. I've never seen that in this country. They didn't do that with Standard Oil, did they?
Yeah, well, you know, I kind of side with Uber and Lyft, because if you're a person who's driving for Uber and Lyft, you've voluntarily chosen to be a driver under the current set of rules. And for the government to come in and say, impose a law that forces those employees of that company, those contractors of that company, to be an employee, all of a sudden they've changed the rules in midstream. And so I don't believe government should be forcing anybody to do anything. I think if you want to drive for Lyft and Uber, fine, right?
Well,
Uber and Lyft don't want to participate in the market in California because all of a sudden the drivers are now considered employees, that's their choice too. So I believe in maximum liberty and choice. And whenever government starts defining the rules of the game or changing the rules in the game midway, you know, I think they've gone too far. I would side with Uber and Lyft on this because, you know, that's how they set it up.
Hold that thought.
People voluntarily chose to be a part of that company.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought, because we're going to argue about this there for the break. SP Futures down 16.75. I think when you don't have a choice, when you got a monopoly like those two guys. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox.
The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Mr. Matt Weber. We have S&P futures down 15. We have NASDAQ futures down 27. And the rest of my screen here is, Matt, you have to traffic and weather and sports first. There we go. Wait a minute. Not just yet. SP Dow futures down 137. Made the save here. Computer came back on. I got a million things open for all these earnings I'm trying to go through. DAX down 156, 1.2%, so we're dropping here. FTSE down 58, it's a full 1%. CAC around down 60, 1.2%. They've dropped in the last hour pretty dramatically. Nikkei up 39.2%, Shanghai up 16.5%, Hang Seng up 322, 1.3. Again, 30-year yield, wait a minute. It was yesterday. 30-year yield, 0.62%, so it's down another two basis points. The Bund, minus 0.51. Japan, positive 0.03. Got oil down 41 cents, 42.41. Brent down 38, 44.52. Natural gas, 232, that's down 3 cents. RBOB, 128, that's actually up a penny. Gold, down 16 bucks, 19.29. Silver down 63 cents, 26.51. Boy, silver's going... That thing hadn't moved for a decade. Now that thing's up and down 2% a day. This stuff is moving, Matty. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still no issues to report on any of the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Light traffic volumes coming in on the north side expressways, Edens and Kennedy, Eisenhower and Stevenson from the west looking good. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford from the south looking good as well.
Lakeshore Drive quiet in both directions, and the suburban tollways are all quiet. There's not even a crash on the side streets, so traffic is very light. If you're heading into downtown, enjoy a nice, quiet commute this morning. Weather today, sunshine, beautiful, a high of 85. Right now it's clear and 70 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 105 today. Right now it's clear and 85. In sports, the White Sox are red hot. They've won 5 in a row. They blew out the Tigers 9-0 yesterday and are now 15-11 on the season. They'll head to the north side tonight to take on the Cubs, who were off yesterday. It'll be version 1 of the Crosstown Classic at Wrigley tonight, 7 o'clock first pitch Central Time. Cubs are 16-8, so both teams off to great starts as we approach the halfway point of the 60-game season. It'll be Dallas Keuchel versus John Lester on the bump tonight. Looking forward to that. Diamondbacks lost to the A's 5-1. And the NBA draft lottery was announced. The Timberwolves have the number 1 overall pick. The Bulls, who were slotted to be number 7 for the fourth year in a row, actually had some luck last night and will get the number 4 pick, three spots ahead of where they were supposed to be based on their number of ping pong balls. The Suns will draft at number 10. Cheap.
We were talking about Uber and Lyft, and I don't really know these rules. I wish Lou was here. This is more of a Lou question because he's in a
hello.
Hello. I was talking about whether people are employees or not. There's for those of you where we're going with this is if somebody's a contractor. Okay, for instance, if somebody came to work for PTI and they said, look, I'm just gonna I got my own clients, blah blah blah, and I'm just gonna do this. If you meet certain tests, we can say, okay, Hal, if you're bringing in clients or something, and you're gonna handle them, you're gonna have maybe even a branch or you're working out of your place, whatever it is, you start when you want, you end when you want. There's a bunch of rules there, and I don't really know what they are, so I'm just kind of debating you on principle. I'm not debating you on the because I didn't read the case, and if you meet those requirements, we can send Hal a 1099, a check that's a 1099. So in other words, he's not an employee of PTI. But now he has to be a Series 7 here and everything else. So that gets pretty fuzzy because it's pretty hard for us. You'd have to really meet the criteria to be a 1099 guy. Not that you couldn't, but it would be tough. I mean, if I were to say, hey, you gotta be here for a seminar, you gotta do this, I mean, that could be challenged real easy because there's a list of things. So now what that means is PTI does not have to pay, 5% or 6% a piece on Social Security if you're an employee. If you're not, we don't have to pay our share. You got to pay, 8 or 9 or something. So the total going to the government is less, and guess what? PTI doesn't have to pay anything. These are more questions, my brother. I'm just giving a more of a... But in general, for a place like that, you'd like to have people not classified as employees. Okay, but that doesn't mean they're not. No, and I don't, like I said, I don't know all the rules. But there also are rules that if everybody gets to do this, well, then guess what? Less money goes into the Social Security pot, less money goes into the unemployment pot, all those other things. So there is somewhat of a rule here. I mean, there ought to be a system. I mean, there's a system of laws. I mean, if it turned out you paid the same amount in Social Security, I guess I wouldn't care. But you don't. So there are differences here. And Uber and Lyft are monopolists, okay? They're duopolists. And that's where they are. And I think the rules should apply to them. Now, they don't seem to think they do. Same way with Apple, same way with these other guys. I mean, Apple, they don't think they should pay taxes. Well, screw you. I don't think I should pay taxes either, but guess what? I don't get to make that call. So this idea that if you're, when you're bigger, you don't pay attention to stuff that schmucks like us have to do, that rubs me the wrong way. I'm just saying.
Well, the problem with the whole thing is what are the consequences of turning Uber and Lyft drivers into employees? Well, I think what's going to happen is because of California's... I mean, if this were happening in Idaho, I don't think it'd be a big deal, but we're talking about California, where the tax rates are much higher. It's much more difficult and costly to operate a business in California than, say, Utah or Idaho. So I think the consequence of defining all these drivers, contractors, as employees is you're gonna substantially raise the cost of driving people around in California, where they might just decide, to exit that market. And I don't believe that they're monopolists, because people can buy a car, people can take public transportation, people can hire a cab. So I don't consider it a monopoly. And the thing about monopolies is that if a monopoly is charging an above market price, guess what? An entrepreneur is going to see that, and they're going to jump in.
The barriers to entry in this country, you know, are so huge.
I know, yeah, especially in California.
But
in
my business, yeah. I mean, the last thing California needs with these higher prices than other people on taxes is a bunch of people not paying it. I mean, you and I'll tell you what, if ever, you know who's the best at this? A guy I absolutely can't stand is that guy Ackman. He comes on TV all the time. He will sit there and write.
Ackman. What channel?
He's on CNBC a lot. He's a mineral. But he'll tell you right to his face, well, I shouldn't have to pay taxes. I give money to charities. You know what? Tell you what. If I didn't have to pay any taxes, I promise you I'll go to the Bass Pro Shop and I'll bait new fishing rods all around. What does that got to do with the price of rice? And the fact is, every I just have this, I don't know, I have this very south side mentality. First of all, when it comes to liberal economics, I'm right with you. You know that. We're two bees in a hive on that regard. But it seems to me every time somebody doesn't pay their fair share, me and the people I care about, including you, have to pay more. Just saying.
Well, you know, I don't know about that. I think that just government just prints up the deficit, right? They just print it up.
I think that if Fed buys
those bonds, directly or directly.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying that of all the bleeps, I'll be clean here. If all the bleeps did, because some of my friends, that one who's no longer with us, unfortunately, some of my friends were the guys who designed some of this double Dutch sandwich crap, you know, where all of a sudden the guy's got a gazillion Starbucks in London and all the profit for the Starbucks is in Amsterdam where they have one. Hey, come on, Carol, you and I are
well, I have a friend that helps companies do that.
Yeah.
He wrote the textbook on transfer pricing economics.
But that
happens a lot.
But what I'm saying is, yeah, it's pretty neat for them, but I also know at the end of the day, you and I taxes, instead of, what are they, 32%? If those bleeps paid, you and I'd be paying 31, right?
Well, actually, I have a pretty good solution for all this taxation. Scrap our current federal taxing system, period. Just scrap the whole thing. And then treat every transaction equally at 0.5%. And I think you'd probably raise more revenues than we are now.
Except for
every transaction at 0.5%.
Except, so
you'd probably raise $3 or $4 trillion in tax revenue.
I give the same argument I give to my brother. He's one of those guys. We'll revamp the system. We'll try another system. To my response is, the same bleeps that manage to find their way around the current system are just going to find their way around the new system.
That's what happens when you put up speed bumps, right?
Yeah.
People drive around them.
Right. So the point,
and then because of that, they put up even more speed bumps.
But how about,
and then people will zoom in and out trying to avoid those speed bumps.
But if it was you and you'll see this happening now with people's disrespect for the law everywhere around. This is just, I'm going to soapbox here. I'm sorry, but I mean, every one of those guys that's going to tell me that their profits are in a certain area of Ireland and not really where all the stores are. I'm not that stupid, Hal. Neither are you. Those people are cheating on their taxes, and if you and I don't cheat on ours, we could go to jail. If those people all got fined personally and a few of them landed in a federal penitentiary, guess what? You wouldn't find anybody else overseas in the double Dutch sandwich. I'm just saying.
But it's legal.
It's not legal.
About this. I have this video on my YouTube channel of Leslie Stahl interviewing a politician from Texas, a Democrat from Texas. And he was upset that some of his, he called them his companies. They weren't his companies. I don't think he owned any stock. But they were in his district, were doing this, right? They were doing this transfer pricing legal maneuver. And they had their IP in a mailbox, I think in Zug, Switzerland. And when this guy, this politician, proposed on Leslie Stahl's show in the interview that he was going to formulate a law that would require a company to not be able to do that unless their management was in the same company. What did that company do? Without the law being in place, the company moved its management to Switzerland. So those are the consequences you have to look at.
Well,
I'm not interested in what the law is intended to do. I'm interested in what happens as a result of the law or the speech.
Well, okay, but when you say it's legal, I'm going to disagree again. It's not legal. It's not illegal. There's a difference.
I would say it might be unethical, but these are the systems that these politicians have set up.
But if you've
gone along with it.
I'm saying somebody wormed their way through the IRS and did not get prosecuted. Okay, somebody decided to send. I'll give you an example. We'll take Thomas for instance. He'd do this in a second. If all of a sudden if Stocks and Jocks got wildly profitable, all right, where we're making $1 million a year. God, I can't even imagine that. But say we were. Why can't it would be, I won't say legal, it would be the practice for us to put a little office down in Bermuda or someplace, maybe the Isle of Caicos, God knows where, and down there we put up a little business, a subsidiary, for instance, and every week on Monday, Maddie calls Thomas to see who's going to be the guest on Friday, you or Hal or Carl or somebody, and we pay $10,000 a month for this service. So now all of our profits, well, $100,000 a month, all of our profits are now down there. There isn't a guy I know over the age or a girl over the age of second grade that says that's not BS, Carol.
But it's the law. I mean, if you have a Cayman Island company, and the Cayman Island company owns the IP, the trademarks, like the name Stocks and Jocks, that Cayman Island operation can charge a price, a transfer price. They have to demonstrate that a second party would pay that same amount of rent to use that IP. As long as they demonstrate that, it's completely legal. So that Cayman Island operation would charge your operation in Chicago a rent, if you will, to use the IP. And that's how you legally transfer your revenue
it has become
to the Cayman Islands.
It was somebody's idea, and somebody managed to weasel it by somebody in the IRS that they probably hired 2 months later or gave a bonus to or something.
I'm not agreeing with it. Yeah, it's just that's what happens.
But I'm saying sometimes when you look at something like that, you say, wait a minute, you've got a U.S. patent that we gave you or a U.S. trademark or a U.S. Yep. copyright, and you've moved it to Bermuda, and now you're paying yourself. How about we take the patent back? I'm saying as a society, Carl... As a society, Hal.
Cal and Hal Rhyme.
Yeah, but you can't let that happen.
Yeah.
Because
I'm not agreeing with it. I'm just saying it's legal.
The politicians
and the lobbyists have formulated these laws in a way that it's legal. And I would say it's unethical, but it's legal.
But nowhere in the code, here's my last rant on this, mm-hmm. nowhere in the code does it say, by the way, if you want to... Put the Stocks and Jocks name in Bermuda and pay everything that it doesn't say that. It doesn't specifically say you can't do that. So people say, well, if it doesn't say you can't do it, I must be able to do it.
Well, the referee doesn't call it holding. It's not holding. Right.
Well, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, does it really fall? But now, last 2 weeks ago in Chicago,
if the bear craps in the woods, he didn't crap in the woods.
Well, now, but in Chicago,
nobody's there to watch it.
When we had our Greco or the storm that came through. If a tree falls on the street and lands on your car, you know it fell.
Yep.
Just saying. But yeah, I mean,
we only get to observe what we observe, right?
But you and I, yes, I will say nice things about these people. First of all, it's amazingly bad for us, I think, for the country, to have the geniuses that are in these meetings about dodging taxes. They should be doing something else. What a waste of time.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I'm just saying, they set up this system, and they probably, the politicians agreed to it. They're not unwilling participants in this. They helped set up this whole system.
They didn't set it up. They didn't agree to it, but they got paid enough money in their back pocket by the lobbyists to look the other way.
Well, I think what happens is the lobbyists...
That's not the same thing to me.
They probably write the bills, and then they get the bill's sponsor, right? And they get that name on the bill, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, by lavishing gifts on them, like dinners and drinks at D.C. restaurants. So, I mean, I think that's how these rules are concocted.
But
and I don't agree with them. It's just the reality of the situation.
But I'm gonna... How can I put this? I'm going to say that if you ask any politician, he's going to say that that's not right. But now, they'd rather have it not be right, okay? But all of a sudden, when it's been going on for 5 to 10 years, and everybody's getting paid by these guys, you know, the lobbyists are there, to all of a sudden stand up and go against them in court and say this is all wrong, that's a much... what did your mom never told you this? Your dad might have said it. You might have said, you're better off asking for forgiveness than permission, right?
Yeah, I don't think my mom ever said something like that.
Oh, no, she wouldn't. My mom never would. The dad might confide it in you, but your mom would never.
My dad was always working. He worked 100 hours a week on his farm, so we never really saw him.
But we're down to, in this country, federal tax revenue. I think we're down to corporate tax revenue is something like 6% of the entire amount, where it used to be like 20 or 22. Now, I don't know if you feel that way, but I feel like you and me and Matt Weber are making up the other 18%. They're not paying it. Somebody is.
Well, yeah, we're either paying it directly to the federal government or paying it in terms of inflation, right?
Well, but I'm trying to... We're on two different things of the chessboard here. You're always higher up on the chessboard than me. What I'm saying is that gave Forest Labs, that was the first one to do the Bermuda thing with the trademark, like you were talking about, that gave Forest Labs 5% taxes instead of 35 over 10 years. So I'm going to say they were able to make acquisitions that you and I couldn't make. And all of a sudden they're three times bigger of a company than, quote, they probably ought to be if they were paying real taxes. And they're more of a monopoly, they're more whatever. There's amazing ramifications to this in the long term, I think.
Well, to me, I just think the whole tax system needs to be scrapped. Start over with something brand new. Impose the new rule with a supermajority in the Senate, so it can't be changed in the future.
But you're doing
and the best one would be just a transaction tax.
But
you know, whether you buy stuff in, you know, buy stuff on the street, you buy stuff from the hawk shop, you buy rubber for your tires, you buy the car. Everybody pays 25%.
But here's
transaction
tax. The unwillingness. What I'm saying is somewhere along the line, and you're doing the same thing my bro does. By the way, he's a very bright guy, just like you. You're dodging. Someplace, somewhere, somebody's got to have the balls to walk up to Tim Cook and say, "You owe us $40 billion in taxes. Pay up." And no matter what, if we change the whole system, and everybody's supposed to pay 5%.
Isn't that why he owns the Washington Post?
Well, but I'm saying, he didn't do that. Bezos. Bezos owns.
Oh, that's Bezos. That's right. Yeah. What does Tim Cook own?
He owns money too.
He
owes money too. I said,
yeah, he owes money too.
Bezos. Yeah, Bezos owes money. Saying, yeah, right.
But
yeah.
Somewhere along,
that's why Bezos owns Washington Post.
But whoever it is, if we put the Hal's new system in or my brother Dan's new system in, 10 years from now, there's going to be somebody cheating, and somebody's got the stones to walk up to him and say, "You're cheating. Here's the bracelets, or give me a check." I mean, and if we're not willing to do that, it doesn't matter what the system is, right? I mean, everybody knows who these people are.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, hey, you know, I think they're the puppet masters, and the politicians are their puppets, right?
Well, that's why.
And we are their puppets.
That's why we need the Stocks and Jacks lobbying group. That when somebody shoves a grouper into Dick Durbin's left pocket, we have one of your students run up and shove $1,100 in his right pocket and say, "Don't do that, do this." They're equal opportunity sleazebags. They'll take our money and listen to us.
Well, hey, I agree. I mean, I think I was in a debate up at Park City at a church about, it was supposed to be about the minimum wage, and it was a few years ago. But one of the guys in the panel was a former corporate officer for a trading company in Hong Kong, and he confirmed exactly what I thought, that you know, part of these corporations' jobs is to see how they can innovate around the rules and regulations that government sets up. Right. In Michigan's textbook, they call it financial innovation. To me, it's just driving around the speed bumps that government uses to, you know, regulate whatever, like traffic or transactions or whatnot. Right.
In the immortal words of one of our guests, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
Yeah, I mean, in Michigan, he calls it financial innovation.
Yeah, what's that?
To me, it's unethical behavior. Right. You're driving around the speed bump.
But this whole
and I drive around speed bumps.
I mean, I understand that in California, you got to pay an awful lot of taxes.
Yeah.
But I also know, in my mind, I will bet you We'll ask Lou next week. Maybe you listen in, or you can call in if you want, Lou's here. I will bet you that been every single checkoff point that those guys are employees.
Well, you know, if California, instead of doing what they're doing, if they just lowered the tax rates, there'd be, I believe, there'd be less going around the system.
See, you and I we're in total different pages here. Yeah. If we lowered the tax rate from 35 to 25, which I think
there'd be more compliance.
Well, I'm going to say that somebody's going to say there's people that just want an advantage, Carl. Or Carl,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, I mean, they want an advantage. So yeah. If it's 25, they're going to have 15 other idiots. How is everybody else paying 25? How do we pay 15?
Well, you know, the supply side argument against high tax rates is that if you set the tax rate at, say, 70% or 90%, you're not going to get any compliance.
Right. Oh, yeah, I agree.
Right? People are going to buy municipals. I mean, I think Thomas Sowell said when the tax rate was like 93%, one dude in America paid at 93%. Everybody else was finding ways around the tax rate. So one way to get increased compliance is to lower the tax rate along the Laffer curve. And you get, because it, you know, it costs a lot of money to harvest these rules, right?
Well, everybody,
there's a lot of money in that. It costs a lot of money to do that. So if you lower the tax rate, you're probably going to collect a lot more taxes because it's just easier to pay at a lower tax rate than it is to pay at a higher tax rate.
Well, that's true. But when the rate was 70%, which it was here for people, by the way, not that long ago.
Yeah, that was like 1980s, right?
Somebody dropped it from 90 to 70. Was that Kennedy? And then
that was Kennedy, yeah.
But you had huge amounts of write-offs. So it got you down to the same place. Hal, thank you very much. Let's not be so long next time. I love jousting with you, bud. And,
All right.
And we'll tweet out how people find you and a whole bit. SP Futures down 13 now, NASDAQ Futures down 12. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.